Thanks for tuning in to Jin and Tantra, and Happy New Year. In this episode, we ask the question, if the myth of a culture doesn't hold, will it break? We also discuss religion and rationality, filling the belief vacuum, finding a unified theory of everything, and building a life that is meaningful. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Jin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes Tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese, Medicinism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail. Your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hey, fellow G&Ters, those of us who like our spiritually with a twist. So we are working on one of our little series at G&T. We like our series.
We do. We like them.
And we're doing Jung's answer to Job, and we got to, like, you might say, the climax point of this whole thing.
Ooh.
About Jesus.
That is... say,
oh, God, at the climax point. Okay. So we're going to Jesus. And we wanted to, like, talk about what Jung thought about Christianity. And we thought we'd do the more difficult part first, which is where he saw the problems with Christianity. So this is our second part of this episode. The first part took an interesting twist. Daniel was just saying, don't take this episode too much off the rails, but it's going to go off the rails immediately. No, Daniel did a great thing last time, which was he described the Enlightenment state, right? And described it in context of, like, this is how he sees Jesus. At the end of this whole long description, I couldn't help but chuckle because I was like, yeah, that's our Jesus. That's our guy. It's not my uncle, Pete's Jesus.
No, it's not.
Or the neighbor's Jesus, but that's our Jesus, you know? And then, like, took the episode in this place of, like, talking about finding your version of the spiritual figures that speak to you, right?
Yes. Yep.
Or maybe creating your own, you know? Maybe yeah. It's like that, right? And I have to say, Daniel, that at the end of, you know, that day, I was talking about Buddha. And the whole idea, like a tantric Buddha. I'm just into that kind of Buddha.
Sure.
I don't want, like, an ascetic Buddha.
You want the saucy one.
I like a saucy Buddha. I like a little bit of a frisky Buddha. No, like, we've talked about it before, but there's a great line in one of the Buddhist stories where, you know, the king asks Buddha, like, how does it go again? Oh, in this rose apple garden so full of delights, if I would have to, like, give up the sense pleasures to experience enlightenment, that I can never do Gotama or something. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah. He wouldn't do it.
He wouldn't. The king is like, no, I'm not going to do it. And Buddha's like, oh, that's how it is. And then he teaches him all the tantras, right? That's one of the tantric backstories.
Yeah.
So we were talking about that. And I thought, okay, so, I mean, there's Jesus is like that too. So I went and I looked and I pulled up the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which okay. I think we can do an episode on, right?
Yeah, we should, for sure.
Follow up. And in that episode, the passage is kind of missing a little bit, but, like, there's no doubt that Mary Magdalene and Jesus kiss.
Oh,
in this thing. And they're some kind of partners, you know, they're some kind of spiritual partners. And my mom loves this book. I don't know why. She's not Christian at all, but she thinks this is so great. She just loves this thing. And so I went and I found, like, a translation of the episode by the exact guy I brought up in the podcast, this Robert Price, this biblical scholar. I was like, I didn't even know he did this.
Huh.
And I've had some luck with sort of, like, finding spiritual materials lately. I had, like, a very deep soul connection with someone. I think we have a deep soul to soul connection.
Yeah.
All of a sudden the spiritual things start popping out all over the place, you know, very conveniently. So, so I found it. So I'll go through and I'll do that. But I was just thinking, yeah, that's the kind of, like, you can find your Jesus that you like.
Right.
Was the Christmas theme of the episode in the end.
That's right.
Do you have anything else you want to say about with that? I don't know. It seems like Schroeder should be playing the piano. Da, 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 da. Then Jesus and Mary Magdalene are making out. I don't know. You got anything more on that one? I just wanted to bring it up because I wanted to propose the episode to you and just kind of talk about that little piece.
No, that's, I mean, I think everything I said pretty much felt good when I was saying it last time. I definitely, you know, for those who didn't see it, that episode, I think I titled it Not Enough Jesuses. So, you know, feel free to check that one out if you haven't yet. But yeah, I was very, I was very proud of that because I feel like we don't always get a chance in a little bit of a longer form opportunity to express how it is that we're feeling with things that have deep meaning, but don't always come up in conversation, and to be listened to and inquired about how we feel about these kinds of things has a large value. So it had value in the moment for expressing it, but then it also has had value all week as I have talked to other people about it, you know, and it's nice that there was a, I was talking with the patient and they were mentioning how a friend of theirs was born Catholic, married a Jewish guy, and their daughter is about to get bat mitzvahed. And the parents were like, well, if you do that, we're not going to speak to you anymore. And so the parents are sort of kept outside of the religious practices of the family, you know, and they're kind of on the outside and, you know, and they're doing the bat mitzvah thing, which is kind of like confirmation, like we talked about last week, you know. And I said, and I told my patient, I said, well, what's funny about this is that neither party, husband, wife, or parents, are practicing their own practice that deeply anyways, you know?
Like, none of them really like are serious in the Christianity or the Judaism that serious about it.
In my opinion, we don't do hot takes too much, but in my opinion, if you're really practicing what it is that you claim to practice, you will have overcome the ignorant and small-minded divisions between you and other people, especially ones of your kin. And to choose separation over love shows your lack of practice and lack of desire to overcome that small perceived separation, which means to me, you are not practicing.
William Blake says something about, like, if your desire is able to be, those whose desires are able to be overcome didn't have that strong of a desire in the first place, something like that. There, right? You go. Yeah, it's like weird on that because it does fit into what we've been talking about. With the kids I watched during the past week, you know, my daughter's back from France, and we watched Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, or whatever this thing is. I think it's based on this old Judy Blume book. I don't know if you know this movie or that came out. Well, it's weird because the story is exactly what you're talking about. It's a Jewish man who marries the Christian woman. The daughter is the main character. That's Margaret, I think, is the name of the character. And the whole family shatters over this.
Yeah.
You know, the grandparents on the mom's side, the Christian side, like disown their daughter, basically say, we're never going to talk to you again over this. And then, you know, I think on the other side of the family, the Jewish mom is very kind of there all the time, kind of hoping that she's going to entice her into Judaism. But the daughter's kind of allowed to make her own choice. And it was funny. I didn't expect it to be that deep of a movie, but I gave part of it away. But I mean, I think you would just get that in the general description. And it's maybe if you, this question speaks to you, if you're watching and like, you're like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, it was a lot deeper than I thought. You know, I thought it was just going to be like a coming of age story, you know, about this this girl. But it got to this place where they were asking that exact question. I'm looking at the behavior of the adults and they're not able to solve their problems. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess that gets us into like, you good. Should I move into the?
Let's do it.
Daniel and I had a conversation beforehand. Like, let's get this episode started. Let's not have like a 15-minute like rambling conversation. Let's get the episode in. So anyways. I don't know how long this was, but we'll see.
About 10 minutes.
Failed anyways. Missed again. No, that was worth all talking about. That shit's So, okay. So the point of this episode, I guess, is about an observation that Jung makes, which I think is, or what seems to be a theme throughout his work, observations and themes that are like, seem kind of prophetic to me.
Yeah.
Which is he basically says, and I think it's partially his experience from his own life, where, you know, he's grew up in this religious family. When he started questioning his father about things, he realized his father really didn't have any answers, which is basically saying, okay, you just got to take all these things on faith, I suppose. But he also really suspected that his father didn't really have that faith anymore, even though his father was a, you know, a pastor.
Right.
Jung definitely had the sense of like, no, he doesn't believe in what he's doing. Not really. He was trying to make himself believe in it, but he doesn't. And I think as Jung matured, he started to look at like, okay, is this myth of this culture still serving me? We talked about that. And he decided that that wasn't the case. But I think as he got to the end of his life, he started writing some pretty, even more strikingly honest things to my eyes. And he started really talking about the idea that if the myth doesn't serve the culture anymore, it's going to break, you know?
Hmm.
And the problem with this myth is that it's so much based on a kind of a faith that it can't stand up anymore. It's like too old in a way, right?
Yes.
It needs to evolve, and people aren't letting it evolve. It's like stuck. So the people who are maybe the truest people, who are, you know, the true believers, but they're kind of in an older version of this that won't move forward. And then I think he does think that this is going to create a kind of an atheism. And the culture will kind of split. So I don't know. You have initial reactions on that? I'll talk about Kierkegaard for a second, but I should throw it out to you to see. I mean, what do you think of that whole set of ideas? I think that seems true to me.
I think, you know, when we were talking about it last week, or last time, I think you put it in a slightly different way. I think that you said that it causes a duality.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Right. And I think then you said that some of that duality, if I'm remembering right, will be filled with materialism.
Well, I think it was materialism and also like probably atheism, both. I think Jung is saying, yeah, I guess those are two different points.
Okay.
Probably both true. Right. When you say materialism, are you looking at it more like not materialism, like a belief that there's just the material aspects of the universe?
I mean, for me,
like consumptionism, you mean that too,
both,
right?
Both. Yeah,
I think that's true. I think both of those things.
Both. Yeah. So then for people, just to kind of make sure that because I'm pulling my thoughts in and I want to make sure everybody's with us, the split, at least in my mind, is that the sort of myth of divinity, we're going to call it that, in this culture or in any culture, eventually will fade based on people's lack of practice or internal desire to do so or presence, however, and then that will lead to like a rift in things, in the myth itself and then within the culture, and then this sort of materialism will fill the void, if you will. And that materialism, and I mean, when I say materialism, I mean biological materialism. So the idea that we are only matter and matter is here, then when the lights go out, matter dissolves and goes back into the ground, and then more happen, and that's the end of that. That is one. And then the other part that came to me last time, and that's why I wanted to show up for this conversation, I also think consumerism, a different form of materialism, fills that void. Especially in the industrialized world. And I say this because I have some, you know, friends who have been on the podcast before, Remy and Ashley, and Remy, whom we've been on before, they had their center in Mexico, Kumankaya, has said that he has some people whom he knows that are down in Mexico, you know, don't have a lot of money, live in these very small places, and, you know, are week to week, basically, right, with their working. And they don't have a lot, but the one thing many of them have is a huge television. You know, and he's like, it's totally backwards. It's totally backwards. You know,
it wasn't where I expected that story to go. I thought it was going to be, but they have the simple faith of their culture. I thought it was going to go to that place.
No.
Not like that. They have a huge inner faith. Instead, it went, they have a huge widescreen, big ass TV. I wasn't expecting that twist.
Right. Okay. And that, you know, so I can't say for sure if that's taken the place of their, you know, Mayan roots or whatnot, you know, but it is present, and more people than not in the world, I think, wouldn't mind having more things. Obviously, that means more niceties in their life. But for me, I don't know how there was somebody who I like, who, and I forget, Naval Ravikant, who is a, you know, millionaire and has been on, has his own podcast and has been on a couple different shows. And he said, he's a wise person, made money in life, and says, you know, of course I'm chasing enlightenment, but I'd rather do it in a private jet. And for me, those things sit in juxtaposition to each other. Because if you're spending your time making money in order to be able to afford a private jet, then I don't know how you're going to have the time to chase enlightenment, if we even can call it a chase. Do you know what I'm saying? So this idea of a split leaves a void. And the void then is, for me, is means of self-soothing, or, you know, some kind of like mental habit of desire. Robert Thurman will say that you're, when you see commercials and things that you are shown to you, you're meditating on desire. And so for me, that desire fills the need for fulfillment or closeness to something, you know, gives you a little pop. And that then that's, so that's why I say I use that term materialism, all of that to say that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause like you were talking about your experiences with the episodes, different, having conversations with people after the last one.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with a patient today about the last one that was, I think the one before that, referencing wisdom and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And she had listened to this one and she said, she sent it on to a bunch of people because she thought it was like a really important conversation. I was like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
As we say. And then I started telling her about the one that we recorded. That's, you know, the one that's going to be Not Enough Jesuses. Is that what it is?
Yes, that's right.
And she was like, oh, I can't wait to listen to that one. And it was hard because, you know, you have honest conversations with people, honest conversations with patients. It was sort of like there throughout our entire interaction with one another, this point, which I made at the end, where I was like, okay, I know you run your own small business. And she felt a little uncomfortable with part of what was being said, because I think she felt like the way our conversation was going, I think she thought one of the undercurrents of it was that she had concern with money. And at some point I said, no, you don't have concern with money. I know you don't. It's not the money. I was saying you have responsibility,
right,
for running this business, and it eats up a lot of your time. I know that you just need enough money to let you have a vacation in the Caribbean occasionally.
Right.
And I was like, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you can enjoy your life. So it was funny. We were talking about a similar set of issues, but not a jet.
Right.
You probably don't need your own jet. You could just get on, like, just buy a ticket and fly down there on a, you know, nice commercial thing, you know? So, I mean, I think she had that. She was trying to figure out that exact same question. Where's her line with that?
Yeah.
How much material stuff does she need? I think we were referencing the king earlier, King Indrabhuti, who, you know, talks with Buddha and basically said, no, like, the people in my culture, like, they want to enjoy their lives, but I also want to have them have the opportunity to be enlightened.
Right.
And so, I mean, the whole point of that tantric story is like, yeah, you can enjoy a life and experience things that are enjoyable, that in a bizarre way, what samsara has to offer, which is enjoyable, you know, samsara being this Buddhist term for like the swirling waters of life that go all kinds of crazy, chaotic ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's enjoyments to be had, you know, within
of course.
That. And I think that's been one of the themes of the show from the beginning. Like, how do you structure a life within the samsaric world, where you can like experience the pleasures of things that probably realistically people aren't going to give up. They're not going to give up the pleasures, you know, that life has, but how do you transform those, tantra transforming, into experiences that are more building towards enlightenment? That's been like one of our projects, like from like episode one in this, right? And, you know, whether it's, you know, Lama Yeshe talking about this in his introduction to tantra, which is kind of a great conversation about this. Yeah, you can enjoy things, right? You just have to be able to enjoy them in the context of them building towards your enlightenment.
Yes.
And that was the conversation I was having with my patient. I was just like, yeah, you can have a lot of things. You can have relationships with people that can be enjoyable. Hopefully. A lot of times they end up being a fucking misery.
It depends on the relationship.
Necessarily so, but we can be honest about it. But you can have relationships with people. You can have like kids, and kids can be wonderful, right?
Yeah.
You know, I love the soulmate connections with my kids that we've talked about in the episodes. That could be very meaningful, but it's going to be driving towards this enlightenment.
Yeah.
So at the end of the conversation with the patient, I was kind of like, okay, I think the idea is that you can enjoy the world, but you have to have this underlying drive towards something deeper, you know? And then I could say personally for me, that's like, I want to be an enlightened person. I want to try to do this thing. What you were describing last week, if that's a thing,
right?
I want to work towards that.
Right.
You know, and that gives a meaning towards my life. And you know what hadn't occurred to me, Daniel? I was like, I said to the patient, I was like, you know, that's my refuge in my life. The thing that gives hope. She brought the word hope. You know, people need hope. And she was talking about, I think, patients that she sees, you know, through, you know, some of her spiritual practice. And I was like, yeah, well, my hope and refuge is to work towards this enlightenment. And that always is the thing that fills the space for me.
Yeah.
Even as life goes through its ups and downs, we all have our heartbreaks and our moments of disappointment and so on, right? But the fact that there's this enlightenment thing always gives me this hope. And I hadn't thought about that, like that taking refuge in your own enlightenment idea.
Sure.
That sometimes they have in the tantras, that your own future enlightenment is your refuge.
Right.
That's what you're working towards, you know?
That's a good thought.
Yeah. Okay, let me say something about Kierkegaard, I guess.
Sure.
I'll get your reaction and then we'll double it back if that's cool with you.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Jung obviously knew all these philosophers. And one of the philosophers that, you know, he would have been familiar with definitely would have been Kierkegaard. Now, how many people know too much about Kierkegaard? Probably nobody, right?
Nobody.
Unless you really have an interest in this. So he's kind of a Danish philosopher. I've been to Copenhagen now. There's kind of statues and streets named after him over there. It's kind of an interesting thing. You know, when you know someone like that, you're like, oh, he's everywhere here. If you want to boil down what he was trying to say, on at least part of what he's trying to say, is that part of the reason that he believes in Christianity is because it's impossible to believe in. There's a kind of an absurdity to it. Mm. But he says that's the power of it, you know, paradoxically.
Right.
For him as a Christian person. So he'd be like what you call a Christian existentialist. His attitude is, I choose to believe in this old myth, even though I know it doesn't make sense for me as a modern person to believe in it, because it's asking me to believe in things that I probably can't fully if I just trust my own reason. He's the person who actually coins the phrase leap of faith. It's him. It comes from him. And so he says, you make a leap of faith and you go and you say, okay, I'm going to believe that 2000 years ago, some person was incarnated on the earth as a divinity and died for my sins. And, you know, kind of a very conventional take on Christianity, not yours from last week.
Right.
Yep. And he says, like, you know, it's really hard for a modern person to believe in that, but, you know, that's what I'm going to do as this Christian existential person. I'm going to make that leap of faith and believe in this thing, like, despite its unbelievability, or maybe with its unbelievability being part of its power or something.
Sure.
So I just wanted to bring up the idea, because Jung definitely would have been familiar with this kind of willingness to make this leap of faith. But even when I was talking with my patient, I was like, you know, it's hard for lots of people to do that. You know, this is a very rare kind of person who wants to take this attitude and do this thing. For the most part, I think that, like, it just doesn't become tenable anymore for people. And so then they're put into that what I actually have it in the notes, this pathological dualism, you know, like you can't hold these two ideas in your head at the same time. It's like impossible, right?
Right.
You can't like be a 21st century rationalist person and then, you know, hold on to this idea that, you know, a couple thousand years ago in like some country I probably had never been, from some books written from someone who never met this person, you know, this thing happened. And I've watched people try to do this, but I think that's what Jung is pointing out. I wanted to bring the subject up because I'm really curious what you think about it. But I remember talking to one of the RNs I worked with.
Sure.
And she was saying, you know, the reason I'm Christian, and she was like holding on to it like so desperately. The reason she was saying she was Christian in this much more orthodox way was because, you know, Jesus came back from the dead. And I was like, okay. And I was never, you know, I'm a polite person with people's spiritualities. We try to be polite here too. I would never say her, you know, no, you know, I'd say, okay, that's cool. I respect that, you know, would be my answer. And yeah, we liked each other, you know, and we had a good working relationship and we're, you know, work friends and whatever. I would never in any way say anything that would be disrespectful to her beliefs. But at the same time, of course, you're kind of thinking, okay, well, there's like tons of old stories. And we talk about, last week we were talking about, like, does Jesus exist or not exist? Is he a mythic character? We kind of brought that issue up, you know, wasn't expecting it, but it came up in the episode. And I thought that was cool to talk about too.
Right.
Right. And I was just like, there's tons of stories where people raise or come up from back from the dead.
Sure, yeah.
There's tons of other stories that are impressive. So to make your whole faith have to hinge upon this thing, it's going to be hard for your rational mind to do that. If you're a Kierkegaard person, you're saying, okay, fuck it, I'm doing this because it's a leap of faith.
Right.
I'm recognizing that this isn't a rational thing to believe. It's not going to satisfy my rationality.
Right.
That part of me, it's not going to satisfy. But his attitude is, okay, fuck it, I'm going to do it anyways. Right.
Right.
Because that's part of the emotional power of it. You know, the spiritual power is making that leap. Maybe you can do that. But I think for a lot of people, that's just not going to hold up. You know?
Mm.
And certainly when you start doing it en masse for like a, you know, like the societal question of it. Right. I think within the society, it's going to be really hard for that to hold up. But I wanted to just bring that question up and see what you thought about that. I know you have an opinion about the Kierkegaard thing at all, or
I think it's a great point, you know, and you know, what do they say? One of the marks of intelligence is the ability to hold two dichotomous thoughts at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I find that statement to make faith more powerful, actually, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's cool. You know, just to see that in that way, I'm enjoying that in my mind.
An interesting take on it. It's not something we talk about too much, you know.
No, it's
famous in the United States, obviously, and you know, a lot of people have never heard of him.
But it's kind of like a scientific or psychological or philosophical viewpoint on faith, which I don't know how many conversations on grand scale are being had about that, because usually when someone says they believe, the conversations kind of stop because people, I think, want to be polite or respectful, or there's not a lot of that kind of a thing, you know, whereas like assuming you have quote unquote faith in whatever it is that you believe in, it's different, but it's the same kind of faith. You're believing something that you cannot put your hands around. You know, you're believing in something that you feel. You're willing to take that, as you said, leap of faith. And so that part is interesting, and it's shared amongst many religions because they're all stories. They're based on stories of people who did amazing things, right? There was one that I found of a saint. I don't know what year it was, the 16 or 15. I don't know what hundreds it was. Saint Francis of Assisi. Oh, yeah. Yeah, numerous reports he could fly.
Yeah.
Or at least jump and float, you know, at a bare minimum. He got hang time. You know?
The thing about that, which is, you know, I was talking to my patient about this. And I did say, you know, Daniel loves these stories. Like, you'd love them.
Yeah, it's super fun.
You love those stories. But for me, I'm like, well, you know, whether that happened or not, I don't know.
Sure.
But I'm not going to hang my whole spirituality on whether
right
some old Italian saint could fly.
You know,
that's not gonna be the basis of this, you know. And maybe that's like Lama Glenn can be amusing on this point. I know you have a softer spot for Carlos Castaneda than I do. I don't dislike him, but I'm not like
yeah.
a Carlos Castaneda person. But like he was talking about one of the I think it's a German guy. He was recommending a book to me, and he said this book is really hard to read. It's written by this German guy, and he said he read it when he was first becoming interested in like Tibetan Buddhism. But the guy's backstory was he was traveling in the Himalayas, and he met a guru, and he said like, oh, it's like Carlos Castaneda, except it actually happened. And I was laughing because then of course there's the whole debate whether Castaneda, any of that stuff really happened,
it right? Probably...
But it doesn't mean his stories aren't inspiring for people if you like Castaneda.
Sure.
You know? But those stories of cities that you brought up last time.
Yeah,
you know,
powers, yeah.
The powers, you know, and that speaks to different people in different ways. But I don't know. Again, it's like the RN. I don't know if I can hang my spiritual life on whether like 2,000 years ago some person flew or rose from the dead or something. It's pretty hard to do that.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on your personality type or something. But
to me, flying is more impressive anyways, just to be, you know.
There's no stories of JC flying.
Yeah, none. Not a single one.
No.
But the Italian priest. Hey.
Yeah, he pulled that off. Uh-huh. But like, I mean, there's one of these mythicist guys, Mark Carrier. And I've tried to get through one of his books. I've listened to him lecture, you know, because I'm open to these questions. I'm open to different points of view. And he's like, sure. He's like this all over the place. Everybody's flying everywhere. So there's no reason to believe in that as opposed to some Indian guy.
Right.
Or did whatever, walked on the water. Like, you know, it's hard to say that that's the, you know, if you think about it, the rational part of yourself. You know, I mean, you could obviously, yeah. Okay, there's tons of stories. Why am I just believing this story? Why don't I believe the story about Krishna where he did all this cool shit? You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's hard for the rational part of the mind to hold those things. Though I get the Kierkegaard thing. I get the leap in faith stuff. I mean, I get that, why people do that.
Yes.
It gives it a power. Anyway, the other thing that occurred to me, I know something more you have on that one or
should no.
The thing that occurred to me is like how this seems like this has unraveled. Because if Jung is being in part prophetic, and I think he is, the way this played out to me, if I was going to give like a history of the United States, and maybe it's different in other countries, and if we have our international listeners, they can say. But to me, I thought 9/11 was a big thing in the United States, and we both were affected in our own ways by that. You much more so than me because you were in the military, right?
Yes.
That affected you real deep. I was like observing from afar. But my feeling of in the 9/11 world is that exploded atheism in the United States to a certain extent, because it got to be this argument. This is like the Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris kind of atheism, if any of those names mean anything to you.
Yeah.
I have no idea who any of those dudes are. Absolutely fine too. It's what one of the things you realize in the modern world, there's these like bubbles of people, you know, and if you haven't fallen into the bubble, you might never heard of these folks.
Right.
There are all these famous atheists. And the way that seemed to me was that there was like this whole thing that happened where people said, okay, so the Twin Towers were hit and the fault is religion. And religion that is sort of has this, I don't even know what the right word for it is. I guess you could say dogmatism, but I mean,
sure,
it really captures it, you know. But it was this whole idea that, no, the problem is religion, and people are holding these kind of naive religions, religious beliefs, and it needs to be replaced by a rationality that will solve everything. So my experience was that there was this huge push during that window of time. Does that make sense to you, Daniel?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was true. And there was this kind of like, yeah, again, there was this explosion. And I felt like it was kind of devastating in the aftermath. Because even though maybe those types of religiosities should be challenged, it left a kind of a vacuum.
Right.
And I suppose the vacuum continued to kind of grow, would be maybe how Jung would look at this, right?
It's still growing.
It's still growing. Yeah. And probably there's been this incredible vacuum of like other disappointments. Obviously 2008 and the financial crisis, like capitalism kind of crashed in people, a lot of people's eyes. Right. And then I think in the United States, in this incredible vacuum, you get something like a Trumpism, even is probably part of that. Now we don't talk about political stuff, but just looking at that as a movement, that's a vacuum filling movement in people's lives or something. All of a sudden this savior figure of this big orange blob is going to appear.
Yeah. Right?
And like solve all our problems. And I remember watching like when he won in 2016, people were like weeping. Like this incredible thing had happened. And I remember thinking, okay, what emotional state do you have to be in?
Right.
To think that this big orange con artist, you know, a slumlord, you know, charlatan is going to like, you know, going to solve all your problems. And you're like, that almost was like a religious response to that. Does that make sense to you too?
Yeah.
There was a religiosity behind that. And it's again, it's like gotten kind of extreme. And I guess on the other side, people have made the point, we don't do political stuff, but on the other point, a lot of the social activism got a religious tone to it too.
Sure. Know?
Even if the causes are good, it took on a tone of religiosity. And the argument goes, I think from going back to Jung, that there was this vacuum that appeared and people started like kind of just grasping around to fill that spiritual gap or something.
Mm.
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think there's something to that? I mean, this is like, I'm not the first person to make this point, but
I think
it's a recent American culture. Yeah.
Yeah. People are looking, like I said earlier, and I use materialism, you know, as that, but people like community, they like to be part of something in addition to the community, just people around you, but they like to have ideals, things that are greater than them to work on, work with, work for, work towards, you know. And the on both sides of the aisle, actually, over the last, you know, probably 10 years or so, has definitely been filling that void for lots of people, including the rise of like the conspiracy stuff, right? You know, flat earth people and all the other,
all that stuff. Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, some of it is true. Yeah, that happens. You know, someone said, oh, hey, there's a sex island that celebrities go to. You're like, yeah, sure. There's a sex. Oh, actually, nope, there is totally a sex island that people go to. Somebody, you know, whatever.
There's a former president who's been down there 27 times, I think someone was telling me in the past week. I was like, 27 times.
Okay. Well, you know.
No idea what was going on.
They have really good sandwiches, you know? And so some of that stuff is true, but it's not necessarily about a specific instance. It's the idea filling the void, right? So the idea of that you are conspiratorial in your belief, meaning that like, you're looking for a different view of reality. What does religion provide? A different view of reality. Mm-hmm. You're looking for a political ideology. Well, what does that provide you with a different view of reality? Oh, you don't get it, right? That's what people will say. You don't get it. This you're missing out on this. You're not seeing this. And what are they trying to do? Convert you. Yeah. No one's going to change religions based on a conversation and no one's going to change political parties or whatever based on a conversation. And yet it still happens. And for me, I agree with you completely. It definitely gives people a sense of community, which is the Sangha, mm-hmm. and gives people a sense of purpose, which is their own kind of like how we're using enlightenment as a hope or a refuge. They're using the manifestation of their political willpower as that kind of a thing, you know, and I then
like by the analogy, that's like their dharma.
That's their right. And then the ideology around it all is the teachings. You know what I'm saying?
That means like Trump is like their Buddha. Or whoever figure is going to be like, that's going to be the saint like figure for them.
That's going to be the saint like figure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Like follow the, Daniel's doing the three treasures, right?
Yep.
Of Buddhist practice. You have a community, that's the Sangha part. And then you have the truth, which is the Dharma part, right? What the beliefs are, the community, mm-hmm. right? And then you have whoever the figureheads are.
Yep.
Right?
And there you have it. And so you'll have, you know, a lot of the signs that you'll see up at the rallies and whatnot will be very prophetic in nature, you know, and unwielding faith towards a human being that probably, you know, shouldn't be had for any particular person because everybody's fallible, you know, and it's not to say that we can't forgive somebody or accept them even with their fallibilities. But it is to say that, you know, the blind leading the blind is not a good way to get to the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't put it in the notes, but as I was thinking about this, you know, this whole question, because what's being said, there was like kind of a unifying belief system. And Jung is saying, look, there should be this myth that should evolve so it can be inclusive. And it just didn't happen, you know? And then maybe these are the things you're going to see in the end. You'll see a belief vacuum and then things will kind of like rush into the vacuum.
Yeah.
And I think like scientism was part of this, right?
Yeah.
It hadn't occurred to me until like today. But when you look at it, like a lot of the people who maybe were going, okay, so maybe it's science is the thing that's going to be our new religion. But that took a weird beating during the pandemic.
During COVID, it took a huge beating.
All over the place.
Yeah, well, and part of it was
because...
saying
of like, believe the science, right? Believe
the
science.
That was it. People said, oh, I follow science, as if to say, because they believe that they're talking to somebody who can't read, you know?
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, I follow science. And you're like, okay, good for you. I'm glad that you follow science. And, you know, Eric, I mean, you and I have had similar education, went to the same school and whatnot. Like, some people actually have studied research, like how research gets done, not just Googled a study that fits your point of view, which, by the way, Google will give you research that will fit your point of view, you know, that will support what you're...
Yeah, GPT, it'll like give you exactly what you want to hear back. Right?
It'll exactly give you what you want to hear back. So the ability to have critical thinking is important, which is why just kind of looping back to where we kind of started, the idea that you can take that leap of faith and have critical thought and say, you know, the story of some person arising from the dead is a crazy story just in general, right? One that I cannot wrap my rational mind around it. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take that leap of faith and say, I believe that that's happened because this person was a special person. And if I believe that that person was a special person, then I believe in the rest of the story. That's the bridge. That's the bridge to believing in. And in this case, what are we talking about? Like God or divinity or something greater than the material. You know what I'm saying? And so for them, they need that crutch. They need that. And I think most people do. We talked about this last time. I think I mentioned something like, having faith in metaphysical abilities, you know, and that being the crutch, which is why I do like those stories about people flying or making, you know, pizza for the ages that everybody will remember how good it was. You know,
that's what he did. Just simple basil and tomatoes.
That was it.
Lord, everybody.
Yeah. You know, but like that gives people something tangible because it's rational, but not rational. And that helps people to believe more. So I am in the camp that I think spiritual practice is better than not having it, generally speaking, but that being a good person probably affects your day to day more than having a larger spiritual belief or religious belief in general, because at some point it does start to look like a political belief. And there is some research, and I'll have to look at the book. I don't have it memorized, but like the place that we decide these things that's located in our brain are very close to like an emotional center. So at some point your ability to make decisions moves over there once they get a little bit more deeply ingrained. And so you're not dealing in rationalities.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not dealing in rationalities. You're not saying, okay, well, these three meters are higher than these 2 meters, so therefore this one's greater. It moves over and you're like, well, what's the ground look like, and what is the, you know, how, who's measuring the thing, you know what I'm saying? And so as you start to move away from that and you start choosing from a place of emotionality, you're not going to be changed anymore. You're not going to be influenced. And there's nothing wrong with choosing from that place, but I don't know that people have the understanding that they're moving from one side to the other side. And once you kind of move over there, it's very difficult to get out of it because, as they say, science no longer applies here. You know, we're talking out of some place of where we believe to be knowing, and it's not based in religion. It's not based in rationality. It's not based in science. It's not based in anything. It's based on feel. And you cannot convince somebody to not feel things, you know, and that's where they're coming from. It's very difficult.
It's an emotional place.
Yeah.
I don't think I really like the amount of splintering that happened, though, because as I was like trying to go through the history in my mind, I went, okay, so 9/11 happened and there was this atheist thing and it was the rationalists versus the religious people, and that kind of like went along. But it almost seems like it kind of like splintered even more, because then you get people's main thing is like to be involved in social causes, which could be noble things, but it has a religiosity to it now, right? People
can't
do it, right? And then you got the Trumpism filling some weird gap, and that's maybe people who are religious, a lot of people who aren't, though, but it's its own kind of funny religion. And, you know, all this splintering of this. So again, I guess I see in that Jung being prophetic in this way. I suppose maybe as we get to the end of the episode, maybe I can share one other thing about this. I think connects back to another part of what you were saying, though, which was that for me, when I was deciding to go to do acupuncture, part of what excited me about it was I was like, but this is an entirely different way of looking at the universe.
Sure.
And I was interested in that. And if you could make some needles and some, what would seem from a Western medical or Western biological or Western sort of cultural point of view to be just some random spots in the body.
Right.
You're just poking, but that would actually do shit, really meant that there was a whole nother worldview in place. Now, I had already gotten we did episodes on extraordinary experiences, and I already had like some experiences that were kind of wild. I met a guy from Okinawa who could shoot electricity out of his hand.
See? Cool, like, power.
It was a cool, and it influenced me. I can't say it didn't. It was a cool power. And I think after that, it was like, you start meditating, you start realizing I can almost kind of read people's minds and shit. Maybe you could do that anyways beforehand. Like I had had situations where like people seem to be able to read each other's minds.
Oh yeah.
That means there's more going on here, right? Even before meditating, that was happening. You know, we all had those kinds of experiences. There's more to the universe, right? But I thought doing the acupuncture was a very definitive statement, because it was like, I'm going to put little metal pokers,
right,
in completely random spots, and it's going to fix people's shit.
That's right. It doesn't hurt at all. Doesn't it
feel That's going to seem crazy. And I had like very sciencey friends. I remember like thinking, okay, part of what I'm trying to make the statement in doing this, because I can do things for crazy reasons like this in part, was that like I think there's another whole way of looking at the world. And I want to do things that demonstrate that to people.
Right.
To show there's more to reality than what you think there is. You're not just a biological robot being defined by the way this culture is telling you how you're supposed to be. You're not. You have you know, other energetic processes going on, and I'll show you through these fucking needles.
Right.
There's more to you. Plus, if we do the needles in certain ways, maybe even we'll tap into deeper parts of your own psyche, or maybe even what we might even call deeper parts of your own spirit. And we'll show that. And, you know, that was, I think, the way the extraordinary things kind of help in that sense too. I've had that sense of that as well. Right. And that does help you go through and think, okay, maybe there's more to this. That mattered to me. I don't know if you had any, do you have any thoughts like that? I mean, I had thoughts like that going into our field. I was thinking, yeah, I want to prove to people that there's more going on in reality. And I'm going to try to do it through this medicine beyond just like fixing their lumbago, their sore back, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, their GERD or something, you know, the fact that they, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Problems. Yeah.
That's one reason why I like to bring people to Remy and Ashley's place in Mexico, you know, drinking the medicine for sure is one of those times where people can cross the threshold, you know, and really move far, far, far beyond what you believe was possible, to have kind of deep healing and visual and energetic experiences that go beyond explanation, but are yet so intimately personal. You know, you're not just drinking a hallucinogenic, because there would be some overlap at some point. It's the same thing, and yet everybody is drinking the same thing, but everybody's experience is different. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of one of these things, but.
But then also, the like we were talked about in previous young episodes, I would think the universe will respond too. You'll have synchronicities. You'll have
absolutely, yeah,
start
yeah. Happen.
You start realizing, oh, wait a minute, my mind got opened in a new way, and reality is different than what I thought. Yeah.
So before we finish, Eric, I want to ask a question, and then, you know, I just see if what we could do, since this is the last episode that we're recording in 2023.
Maybe we'll do it next week, but maybe
we'll do it next week, but maybe just in case it is. We've never done this before. So we'll just give it a shot. Right. So looking at it from an anthropological societal perspective, okay. We see, you mentioned 9/11 as one place of splitting, right. In the culture, psycho-emotional culture split between kind of religiosity and then rationality. And in the rationality camp, we have science also. Then we have kind of like the 2016 election as another one, and maybe even a little bit before that, already kind of like starting to the fabric is kind of starting to ripple. I feel
like the financial crisis ruined capitalism for people.
There we go, 2008, 2009.
Like that were like big deals. Yeah.
Yeah, they were totally big deals that, you know, kind of left a psychic wound really in people's minds, you know, and economic wounds in this country. I mean, I know, I don't know if it was all over the world, but I know for here, places that were already kind of shaky took a huge hit.
And like, and a so, loss of faith in the whole idea of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So maybe we'll call it hits on faith. Right.
Yeah.
And then again, the election, and then the hits on faith went even deeper with people who believed in science as the last truth, the last bastion of truth, right, during the kind of the pandemic. And so now things are definitely different than when they were, which is always could be the case as time moves forward. But, you know, just based on this shift, and I'm not asking anything specific, but if you were using your top hat of Merlin or Nostradamus, where would you imagine, where could you imagine that there might be another you know, shift that would change the, you know, another bastion of hope that seems to be relatively ubiquitous or at least held by a large percent of the population?
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer that. Here's my gut answer.
Sure, give me the gut.
Okay. We're doing this podcast.
We are.
This podcast is not going to change human culture.
It is not, but it might for some.
I see it as like, this is the act of faith. This is the leap of faith. To me, the leap of faith that I kind of believe in is this idea of the seekers, people who are seeking out something different, creating a new kind of spirituality, a new kind of way of looking at the world. We were talking before the episode started in our kind of pre-episode little convo that we have. It just came up like, I'm trying to write my own stages of the path. I'm trying to write my own worldview that seems true for me. You know, I'm writing my own version of tantric, Zen, Taoist, Sufism.
Right.
Right. And so to me, I see that is the point of hope. You know, now that doesn't answer your question, I know, because we're talking about something that will be much more sweeping and social. But my own kind of personal, like, karmic inclinations are not in that direction. I tend to see the cope in the actions of, you know, individual folks, like what we're doing, or maybe people who are listening, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what happens. Now, there is this, like, little theory. It goes back to this guy. What's his name? His last name is Wilbur. I forget his first name. You know, he talks about this idea. If you can get a certain number of people, like we were talking last week about like the 5 to 10%, if you get 5 to 10% of the people trying to like create something different, it will tend to kind of ripple, you know? Do I think that that can happen in some way where we're all going to like decide that we're all going to believe in the same guru or something? I don't even want that, to be honest.
Right.
I think that's played out, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's over. My hope for hope would be that, you know, individual people will resist. Like, one of my favorite things is you just resist the outside and create your own thing, right? And then that will be the magic for the future. So like, that's my answer to it. That isn't trying to see a prophecy, but that's more like, I guess, stating a hope, and at least why I've been trying to do the whole thing I've been doing my whole life, to be honest. That's because of that. And to the extent that hopefully that has an influence beyond just myself, you know, we've done this in different ways. I've tried to do it with students. I've tried to do it with patients. Now we're trying to do this with this podcast, you know, like that's the goal. You just try to like push this idea, right?
Mm.
So I don't think that answers your question, but I mean, it is my gut answer to it.
Okay. That's
how about
fair
for you?
So I can't predict the future, so I don't know that I would. I can only say that large scale events have, you know, they leave marks on society like traumas leave marks on people. The external wounds appear as rule changes and laws, and the internal marks or the internal scars appear as these rifts, you know, away, moving further away. But I think the point that you bring up, so I can't predict what's going to happen. There'll probably be some more financial stuff. There'll probably be some more.
Yeah, a bunch of fucked up shit's going to happen.
Right.
Like that, you know, there's going to be an environmental crisis. It's going to go shitty. You know, that probably is going to happen, you know.
But so, I think that there are not too many bastions that are not tethering a little bit. You know what I'm saying? They're not fraying already, you know?
They're teetering and tearing.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're
some
not
might
totally
say this is the age of Aquarius, you know?
And
things are like being kind of pulled apart. I mean, Jung writes about that.
Yeah.
He's moving out of the time of Pisces, the Aeon of Pisces. He wrote a whole book called Aeon. About like, you know, the Jesus. We'll talk about when we talk about Jesus maybe next time for people.
Yeah.
Like the audience.
Yeah.
You know, the Aeon part, you know, we're moving out of the Pisces thing, which we'll explain what that means next time.
Yeah, next time. Yeah.
And yeah, we're moving into Aquarius, and Aquarius is like a harsh energy in some ways. It's the last shit's going to fall apart in Aquarius.
But when it does that, too, kind of like just adding to your point a little bit, like we end up having the democratization of ideas.
And that's, you know, the positive side of it, right?
Right. And that's the positive side of that. So in a true democracy, everybody's input is equal to the others. Obviously, we don't exist in a true democracy and based on money, power, fame, notoriety, and the desire to have all of those things, not everybody's voices has the same thing. But in our own kind of communities and our own relative realities, if you want to call them that, we can decide to choose things that are not necessarily within what the culture would want or even accept. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that's what I'm advocating for.
Yeah. Right? And so then we've
been doing this thing.
Yeah. And that goes towards the podcast that we are offering. It goes towards the work that we are offering in terms of like with patients and whatnot. Somebody, I did a breath work workshop, and I said, you know, give us a, I like to have everybody do a little introduction. I say, tell me what you'd like to be called and tell me what you do in life. I don't want to know your career. I want to know what you do. What do you do in this lifetime? And when it came around to me, a name that was given to me by Lama Glenn was Ocel. And so I said, you know, my name is Ocel and I teach meditation.
Yeah.
Because I believe that to be the greatest tool that I could teach anybody.
See that, like, to the question you're posing, the one thing I can say for sure for that is that I believe in the fact that we can go through as individual beings, take our own spirits, our own Buddha natures, you know, our original spirits of who we are, Yuan, Shenzi, Mai, Chinese, and do something with that. That I believe.
Right.
That I can put some money on. So if that's like a nice way to end an episode for me, I think that's the for me.
Yeah. And that
we can go through and we can be creative spiritual beings and come up with our own ways of living our lives. I think that I believe in. Other stuff I don't know, but that I
yeah. do. Yeah. And then maybe the energy that would normally get put into like shared communal or shared societal beliefs like religion or like science or political whatever, you can take that natural wiring, that natural tendency to want to be a part of a collective and fold that back in on yourself, actually, and fold that back in on your own development. It's not to say that you can't be involved in those things, because that's an act of compassion on a large scale, which I think is useful. But on the other hand, the tendency to want to believe or be a part of some kind of spiritual thing, because we are wired in this way, instead of just letting it go and just going, well, fuck it, you know, that shit's not real. You could take that energy and actually maybe make, as we're using it a lot in this episode, the leap of faith and try, you know, because as you see things are splitting, that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be split yourself. Let others be split, but not those few that are going to make the effort to try and find something that, I love to say it, is beyond the obvious.
Well, I mean, like, I think also, and I probably have to like get going in a second, but we can build partnerships that are of our own design and creation.
Right. And new partnerships
that are outside of like maybe what the rules might have been previously, but we can do this, you know? I mean, like, and, you know, we have a spiritual partnership that's involved in producing this stuff and that helps some people out. That's cool, you know? You know, you can kind of like form spiritual partnerships in a new way based on something that's much more authentic to how you see the spirituality of the world or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the opportunity within this.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe, and I think that fits with what Jung was saying to bring the whole thing around. Like ultimately in the end, like we tap into the archetypal world, we tap into the spiritual world, and we share in a new way that isn't being structured from the outside.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
That seems a beautiful way to try to end it. Unless
I think so. I didn't want to end it on a, you know.
it's not being in a bummer. I think this is the opportunity, right?
I think
the opportunity is to build. I mean, that's the whole theme of the show, right? To try to build lives that are spiritually, existentially meaningful to the beats of our own drums.
Yes.
In our own way. That's a freedom.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. All right, beautiful. So we pulled it around again.
That's it.
The end of every episode, we pull back to something positive.
Yeah, why not?
It's good. It should be. That's what I believe in.
Yeah.
Like, sincerely, I can say, like, I actually literally believe in that. Will it change the whole society? I don't fucking know, but I believe in that. That we can do.
But if society is made up of individuals and we can have influence on ourselves and individuals, and eventually something will happen.
Maybe that 5 to 10% thing works and things start to shift.
Yeah, right? That would be a huge audience if we had 5 to 10% of all the people.
I'm not holding it on that. But yeah, other people will be doing their own boogie too.
And maybe that's right. But on that note, we would love to have people share our work with their friends, families, coworkers, enemies, and strangers even. So if you enjoy what we're doing, leave a comment in the YouTube or wherever else you can, on Instagram, something like that. Email us jinandtantra@gmail.com. And if you are not subscribed on Spotify or Apple or YouTube, please go ahead and hit that sub button. We appreciate it. It does help the algorithm kind of get us to more people. We have been growing a little bit over the last few weeks, and more people see our work, and it's wonderful. And actually, if you're here with us at the end of the video, you are within like the 5% of people that stay to the end of these things. So thank you very much. We do appreciate all the love and all the, constructive criticism. We'll take it all and put it in the Tantra machine and make a chocolate cake out of it at the end and feast on it as we dance naked around a fire to some random god who does or doesn't exist based on how you believe.
And you can decide for yourself if that deity exists.
That's right. We could also be manic and just, having a breakdown. But, either way, we're enjoying it with pleasure, as my teacher Andre would say, with pleasure. So with pleasure, Eric, thank you so much for being here. To our audience, thank you for listening. For Eric, this is Daniel. We'll catch y'all on the next one. Peace. I want you to get together. I want you to get together. Put your hands together one time. I want you to get together. I want you to get together.